Hello and welcome to a special edition of the To Be More podcast. This is Conversation with the Candidates. This is the race for Baltimore Sheriff. We invited both candidates on, the incumbent and the challenger, but only the challenger took us up on the offer. So you'll get an opportunity to hear from him. Thank you very much for joining us, and I hope you enjoy. All right. Well, good day to you, Mr. Kogan. You're running for the office of sheriff in Baltimore. Something that isn't spoken about a lot in this city, considering all the problems and challenges we have with public safety, the sheriff's office kind of goes under the radar. Why are you running for this office against an incumbent who's held the seat since 1989?
Right. Well, thank you for having me on the show, first of all. And thank you to your listeners for hearing me out. The sheriff's office is incredibly important in public safety. And it's sort of been flying under the radar. And we do some very important public safety things that if we enhanced and modernized the office of the sheriff, it would help with safety in the city. And the biggest one, and the one that's most out front, is the service of arrest warrants that come out of the circuit court, what we would call bench warrants. And so the police department's responsible for the warrants that are coming out of the district court. But the sheriff's office is responsible for the warrants after a conviction in circuit court. And if someone's on probation, and then they violate that probation, then the warrant is sent by the judge to the sheriff's office to serve. And because the sheriff's office isn't doing a very good job of that, what we have is we have a warrant backlog, and we have people who are wanted on warrants, who could be repeat violent offenders, that are still harming the community by committing additional crimes, and they have open warrants that the sheriff's office should be serving. So that's one of the reasons that I'm running for sheriff, is to try to close that gap. And so we can make the city safer through the service of warrants through the sheriff's office.
So obviously violent crime is pretty much taking center stage. It took center stage in the mayor's race. It's taking center stage right now in the state's attorney's race. But again, people don't hear much about this race for sheriff. So right. I thought it was important to have you on as a candidate. Now, you talk about the service of warrants, and we've seen many repeat violent offenders get arrested, and they said this person had a warrant at the time. How many warrants is the sheriff's department serving per month out of how many? Is there any way to quantify that?
Sure. Yeah. So the most recent information we have came from a budget hearing that happened last Tuesday, where actually the sheriff didn't appear, and they had to cancel the budget hearing because they couldn't get adequate answers. And it's rescheduled for tonight on Monday. But what we did learn before they canceled that budget hearing is you had the commander of the warrant unit, the captain, was present in absence of the sheriff. And he qualified that only 18 warrants are being served by a 6-person warrant unit through the sheriff's office. But if you look at the budget book, it was submitted. It said 1,800 warrants are issued out of the circuit court every month. And I can tell you, because I did 25 years at the sheriff's office, and I also worked in the fugitive unit at one point in time earlier in my career, that there are literally thousands of paper warrants that are stacked up at the sheriff's office that are backlogged. So we have a huge percentage of the warrants that are being issued or not being served. And part of that is, and we get into like why that isn't happening, part of that is the priorities of the sheriff, not to staff the warrant unit accurately, not to staff the warrant unit fully, but to serve evictions at a much higher rate than we're serving warrants. So like, for example, in the budget book, again, there's 27 deputies assigned to serve eviction orders, but there's only 6 deputies that they spoke of to serve warrants. And when we look at like what is the priority in the city right now, and we look at repeat violent offenders, and we look at a lot of warrants are being issued. And again, that these individuals who are wanted on these warrants could be repeat violent offenders that are continuing to harm the community. The sheriff should really be stepping up. And what I want to do as sheriff is step up, really staff the warrant unit, and try to apprehend some of these individuals who are harming the community who have open warrants on them.
So really quickly for our viewers and listeners, sheriffs versus police, the sheriffs in more the metro areas, if you think about 95 and think about 695, 495, most have police departments. And you look at Harford County, they have a Harford County Sheriff's Department, which is a full-time handle calls like the Baltimore Police. But then when you get into the metros of Baltimore City, Baltimore County, Anne Arundel, Prince George's, Montgomery, the sheriff's focus specifically on warrants, evictions, and domestic violence. Am I leaving anything out? And can you just kind of walk us through how those are prioritized for the sheriff's departments?
Yeah, great. So thank you. So we have to have a sheriff's office in the city because the sheriff is the enforcement arm of the court. And while, of course, you know, and the listeners know, the police department is handling the 911 calls and most of the investigations, and it's much larger, we still need an enforcement arm of the circuit court. And that's the role of the sheriff's office. So when an eviction is issued, the sheriff's office will go out and execute that eviction because they have that civil authority because the sheriff is elected. You also have, we transferred the protective order service over from the police department to the sheriff's office. And the reason we did that is because sheriffs are court centered. And so it's easy for us to go out and serve those orders and get it back to the court because we're used to serving court process. So that was helpful and also freed the police department up to do patrol so that the protective orders weren't there on the in the patrol function. And also we serve warrants that are coming out of the circuit court. And court paperwork that's coming out of the circuit court. And so you mentioned Howard County and Anne Arundel County and Prince George's and Montgomery County. What those sheriffs have done over the years is they've modernized their office and they've implemented technology and they really play a bigger role in public safety and work more closely with the police department than our sheriff does in Baltimore City. And so we need to do that. We need to really recognize that warrant service from the circuit court level is a tool that the sheriff's office can use to reduce crime. And that's just not being implemented right now because of lack of modernization and also a lack of priorities of the current sheriff.
Does the sheriff's department have or sheriff's office have anyone on the warrant apprehension task force?
I do not believe that they do currently. I know that they're associated with a group called the Capital Area Regional Fugitive Task Force, which is a marshals group. But again, we heard from the captain who commands that group that only 18 warrants are getting served a month, and that's less than one warrant a day. And that's not going to be effective in reducing crime. And I want to just like walk back for a little bit about how that warrant originates, and because it impacts those violation of probation warrants impact parole and probation. So parole and probation will have someone under their supervision and they'll violate their probation. And so the agent will go to court and they'll say to a judge, you need to issue a warrant for this person because we got to get them back in here because they're not abiding by the probation rules that have been set forth. And sometimes it's because they've committed additional crimes while they're on probation. And so those warrants, again, are getting issued at a circuit court. The judges are issuing them, giving them to the clerks, and they're going down to the sheriff's office and they're not being served. That's what we learned at the last budget hearing. And that's very impactful because it impacts, you know, the entire parole and probation system in the city when that happens.
Yeah. So, again, for our listeners, as we use some acronyms here, WATF, Warrant Apprehension Task Force, that's a localized version. It has nothing to do with ATF. It just happens to be the acronym of Baltimore City Police, Baltimore County, I believe, is part of this, Anne Arundel County, maybe Annapolis. I'm not 100% sure on that, but a few different jurisdictions are together as one specifically to go after outstanding warrants in the region, not just the city of Baltimore, but in the region. But it allows you to force multiply, for instance, if there's a high priority offender where it could be a murder warrant for somebody they've haven't been able to track down. So just wanted to point that out. Kind of surprising to hear that the sheriff's office is not or potentially not involved in that. Back to the budget hearing. For people to understand as well, is this similar to the state's attorney's office where the city really doesn't have much influence over the sheriff's office or the state's attorney's office for that matter? You have an elected person in the position. And if the position was vacated, if Sheriff Anderson just left today, it would be the governor who filled it, where the state's attorney's office would be the judges. And just want to point out, it was Governor William Donald Schaefer who appointed Sheriff Anderson, which really is just truly amazing. 1989 was a long time ago. Is it similar in that respect where you're going as a member of the sheriff's office, as the head of the sheriff's office, to the council to ask for some funding because the city funds the sheriff's office?
So that's a great point. So yes, the answer is yes. The sheriff is an independent elected official who determines the priorities of the office. So for example, they'll go to the city council and to the mayor, and they'll ask for a budget and for the budget to be approved. But the city council and the mayor aren't setting the priorities of the sheriff's office because it's an independent office. Just like you couldn't tell the state's attorney, we're going to fund your homicide prosecutions, but we're not going to fund your sex crime prosecutions. That's the state's attorney sets those priorities. And so if we look at the budget that was submitted this year, we see that you have many, many more deputies assigned to an eviction section than are assigned to the warrant group. And that's confirmed in the budget hearing. And so while evictions have to be done and they're important, we should look at efficiencies within that section because, again, they don't have technology implemented and they don't have route optimization and there's not a records management system. And some deputies have a lot more work than other deputies because the districts haven't been redrawn. And so you could get that efficiency with less people. But we know that warrants are being issued every day. And we know that behind these warrants are some violent criminals that are out in the street. And it's my opinion, and it would be my like day one solution when I walked into the sheriff's office, if I'm lucky enough to earn people's votes, to say that we need to have the sheriff of Baltimore City serving warrants, you know, working with the warrant apprehension task force and really making sure that people who have open warrants or repeat violent offenders that are out in the streets of Baltimore committing additional crimes are arrested and brought back in front of the court. That has to happen if we want to have a safer city. And it can't happen right now with just 18 warrants being worked a month.
When you say the districts being redrawn, do you all follow the Baltimore police districts or do you have your own set of boundaries?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's their own set of boundaries. But again, we're talking about, you talk about 1989. These boundaries haven't been redrawn. In my estimation, was at the sheriff's office 25 years, during the 25 years that I was there. And because you've had a change in the city, that's another thing that's inefficient. So again, you could have one deputy and he's got 100 times more work than the deputy that's next to him because the district boundaries that we have at the sheriff's office are really arbitrary and there's no evidence or science behind them.
Wanted to follow up and ask, do you know if the sheriff has the sole discretion to change those boundaries or is it similar? I mean, do they have to go through the legislature to get the approval to change the boundaries? Is that something that you could go in and do day one?
Yeah, it's something I could do day one. And again, those boundaries were drawn back at an outdated system where paper warrants or paper documents would come in and they would pigeonhole them in like mail slots based on these districts for each deputy who would have an area that they would work. And that's what we call the district. And that stayed the same for the entire time that I worked at the sheriff's office. And that really needs to change. We need to have a computer drawing of where the addresses are that we need to go. We need to implement a records management system. We can't operate like we were operating 33 years ago in 1989. It's no longer feasible. And if we did operate in a modern way and modernize the office, it would really free up the personnel that exists at the sheriff's office and the resources to work these warrants that I'm talking about. So it's a day one solution that you don't need anyone's permission. You just need a modern leader who's forward thinking. And that's what I want to do.
And, you know, you have the credentials. You rose to the ranks of number two at the sheriff's department. You're very well engaged in the community. And many people might already know who you are. At the same time, as you tout your career and how long you served there, some people might ask, a lot of these things could have been in your purview. Why didn't they change during your tenure? Does this current sheriff have that much of a hold on the agency that leaders in the top ranks can't make effective change?
That's a great question. I'm glad you asked it. So one correction, right? I never got to two. I got to three. Okay. I wish I'd been number two, but I was not. But I got to number three, was promoted 8 times within the office. And I was a change agent in that office. I talked about bringing the domestic violence orders from the police department to the sheriff's office. That was the project that I worked on, and I was able to make that happen. But, you know, these bigger changes, these technology changes, record management changes, they once you start computerizing, then you move into the realm of accountability. And it was my opinion that the number two and the sheriff didn't want that level of accountability. They wanted to do things the way they wanted to do it, and they wanted to do things the way that they knew how to do it. And that was to avoid technology and do things paper. And I used to hear all the time, You know, we're going to do it a normal course of business, and we're not going to change these things. So I was rebuffed many times when I tried to reach out and make these changes within the office, and they just didn't happen because you need the leader to make these changes. You need the leader of the office to say technology is important to me. Evidence is important to me. Data is important to me, and that we need to restructure and modernize the office. And if you don't, if you continue to do things the way you did them in 1989, because they worked then and you think that they work now, that's why we have some of the problems we have at the sheriff's office. And it's also one of the reasons I'm running, because I couldn't break that barrier of, hey, we need to modernize. We need to do more. We need to serve the city in a more accountable way, in a more transparent way through data and through implementing technology. And so, you know, that's one of the reasons I'm running, because I was not able to do that as the third in command.
So 4 years ago, 2018, there was a sheriff's election, and Stan Branford, who was now, I believe, deputy chief in Annapolis and former commander in Baltimore City Police Department, ran for sheriff. He got almost 40% of the vote, and he had a very small campaign, right. But was able to get almost 40% of the vote. A lot of it could have been people who met him, knew him, saw him. But a lot of it also could have been voter apathy, because they just aren't in tune with the sheriff. What is the reception that you're getting? I see you out there all the time, every day, meeting different people. What are people saying to you when you say, I'm running for sheriff of Baltimore? Do they think it's a cowboy? What do they think the sheriff of Baltimore is? And do they even know who your opponent is?
Right. So a lot of them do not know who the opponent is, and most people do not know what the sheriff's office does or could do. And that's actually a good thing, because as I'm meeting people, that's the hook, right? I'm saying I'm running for sheriff because I want to modernize the office and bring it into Baltimore City as a modernized office that will do more for safety, public safety, and housing safety. And then I get to people are curious about that, because they don't know who the sheriff is. He's very low name recognition. Most people in the city have never seen him ever at any event, or they may see him on a television commercial or on a billboard during election time, but they haven't seen him during the course of the regular year. And they're very interested, because most people, as you mentioned before, are very interested in what can we do in Baltimore City to reduce crime and make people safe. And so it's a very salient message. People are very receptive to my message of, hey, we need to work more warrants. We need to modernize the office. We need to have the deputies, you know, start patrolling the outside of the courthouse and answer the 911 calls to help the police department. We need to bring, when courts are closed, the deputies into the community to do special events and charitable events and festivals and be more engaged and do more police work. Once I start talking about things like that, people are immediately interested in that office. And they also are like, well, I'm sort of upset that the sheriff's office hasn't been doing this, and I don't know who the sheriff is. And so I've gotten a really good reception because of that.
And another thing I want to point out, because again, I think for metropolitan type residents, city center residents, they might not understand the sheriffs have full police law enforcement powers,
right?
The same as police, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know that there's anything the sheriffs can't enforce in the city of Baltimore. Is it something, am I mistaken in saying that?
No, it's very interesting, actually. When you look at the public and local laws that created the police department, it says very clearly that a Baltimore City police officer shall have the same authority to make a criminal arrest as a deputy sheriff. And so these are like the historic powers that sheriff's deputies have throughout the state of Maryland. They still have in Baltimore City. And so you are correct. They have full police authority. They can make traffic stops. And really, the sheriff's office needs to do more in the public safety arena to help out. We've heard this, you know, I know it's a cliche, but it really should be an all hands on deck approach, where every law enforcement agency is there helping out, doing what they can within their lane. And the sheriff's office lane is the enforcement of the courts. But also, since they have police authority, they can, again, help out patrolling around the outside of the courthouse and also help out on weekends doing community events and festivals and neighborhood events. That would help the Baltimore Police Department, the larger agency, you know, in, as they try to reduce crime in the city. And
yeah,
so,
I mean,
yeah, it's like a no-brainer. That's what people are saying. Yeah.
When you look at it and look, you know, back on it, you kind of wonder, you know, how some people have escaped the scrutiny over the last 8 years, especially. Again, this is just full disclosure. This is not any sort of groundbreaking thing, but the years I worked there, the multiple police commissioners, the multiple mayors, I have seen the mayor, the state's attorney, the police commissioner stand up and address crime. The police commissioner gets the majority of the blame all the time for crime in Baltimore. Somehow or another, the sheriff has been able to escape the scrutiny in the sheriff's office, I'll say. Are you prepared to jump into that fire? Or, I mean, because really, the more you put yourself out there, the more accountability you're going to have to absorb. So are you going to stand next to the police commissioner and the mayor and the state's attorney when they are having all hands on deck conversations?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I'm doing. I'm raising my hand saying I'm going to be different than the current sheriff. Right. I want to change things. The sheriff's office needs to be accountable. They need to be responsible and they need to do more. That's what has to happen. And I want to take on that responsibility. So I retired to run. I could have gone and gotten another law enforcement job or been a consultant. That's not what I want to do. I want to go back to the sheriff's office, assume the leadership of that agency and bring it forward, you know, and raise my hand and say, I want to be accountable. I want to be transparent. I want to do more. I want to help in the public safety fight that we have in the city. And I want to make the city safer. That's what I want to do. And we need to do that. And again, like you said, if you're not doing the work, then no one can hold you accountable. So we have to do the work. If the sheriff's office is not doing the work, we're not enforcing the court and we're not helping out the parole agent who has to violate their person because they're committing additional crimes, issues a warrant. If no one's looking for that person, you know, that the whole stream doesn't work. The police officer who arrested that person and made a good case, the state's attorney who prosecuted that person and got a conviction, the judge who sentenced them, and then they get put on a sentence of probation and it goes to a probation agent. And then the individual defendant doesn't do what they're supposed to do and commits another crime and no one looks for that person. It's the sheriff's office who dropped the ball there. And everything that everyone did, you know, to make that person accountable is not effective if the sheriff's office isn't serving those warrants. So yes, we need to be accountable. People need to know we're accountable. People need to know that I want to be accountable. And then I think we can reduce crime in the city, you know, in our lane by serving those warrants.
So as we look, forward, do you believe that there are any positions within the current sheriff's office that you would maybe take over later on this year that could be civilianized to put additional sheriff's deputies on the street or handling warrants or what have you? And the second part of that is just a question out of curiosity that bubbles up often. The state's attorney, whomever that might be post-November, they have executive protection. They're members of the Baltimore Police Department. It looks a bit odd to me, considering that position is quasi-state, right? And it works out of the courthouse, but it's Baltimore police that provide that protection, maybe four, maybe six at times. Do you think that that's something that the sheriff's office should handle? And the other side of that, because staffing is the issue for everyone, was that question about, are there positions that could be civilianized within the sheriff's department or sheriff's office, I apologize, that might be handled by a sworn sheriff's deputy right now?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Let me answer what we can do within the sheriff's office to sort of gain efficiencies. So when people come to the courthouse, they'll see deputy sheriffs or court security officers that are law enforcement officers with badges and guns that are at the front doors screening bags. And you'll see that. That at the level that they're having personnel do that, sworn personnel, that can be reduced and civilianized where you have people who are coming in as court security officers who are 18, 19, 20, or 21, and they're cadets. And we've seen that succeed at the police department where you have a cadet program. And these cadets could screen bags at the door and do a security function as long as they're being supervised by an adequate number of deputy sheriffs in case there's an emergency. And you sort of have the same process at the airport, where you have the TSA working and then you have a law enforcement officer observing. So if you did that, there's almost 19 people who are sworn that work the doors because there are multiple doors at the court facilities. If you reduce that, that would give you some efficiencies with some more deputies that you could do some of these things. Also, in the eviction section, you have people are actually physically answering the phone, and there are 7 people physically answering the phone every day instead of being able to schedule by email. And those people are process servers. And instead of answering the phone, if you let people schedule by email, that frees up 6 or 7 additional personnel. And so that you have, like, you have these civilian personnel that will free up deputy sheriffs because it's waste and inefficiency that they're in the positions that they're in. And that will let you do some more things. Back to the state's attorney's office. I've always felt, and obviously this will be up to the state's attorney and the police commissioner, that if they pass the budget on to the sheriff's office, the sheriff's office is ideally situated to do the executive protection for the state attorney's office. I believe that the sheriff has turned that down in the past. The current sheriff, I think it's a great idea. I think it makes sense that the state's attorney is part of the court. The sheriff's office is part of the court. The sheriff's office should be providing that protection. And again, it allows the police department to move those people in and assist with their shortage. And again, but you have to have those conversations. So the sheriff has to be out there and says, what can I do to modernize my office and create efficiencies so we can help in the general crime fight in the city? And so it starts there. And so it starts with talking to the state's attorney and the police commissioner and the mayor's office and saying, hey, we want to do more. We have the capacity to do more. Do you want to fund some more things? Do we want to change some personnel around? And everyone working together. And like you said before, the sheriff is not talking to the mayor and is not talking to the police commissioner and is not talking to the state's attorney and is not publicly talking. What can I do more to assist in crime? You don't see the sheriff out there. I would be the kind of sheriff you would see out there and having those conversations.
Yeah. Time flies when you're having fun. I think we're learning a lot here because it's just an area that is underreported. But I want to touch on the humanizing eviction. I don't know how much humanizing can be done in such a situation because it's a necessary evil. But there are advocates who are completely against the eviction process. When you speak about humanizing eviction, can you get more into what your role is as a law enforcement body tasked with enforcing it? Because on the other side of the eviction are the people who own these properties who might be losing money themselves. So, I don't think anyone who's a landlord wants to see anyone's stuff out on the side. However, I don't think anyone who's a landlord wants to go an extra month without getting paid and no recourse to get their money. Sure. So what does that mean, humanizing evictions?
Great. So let's talk about what happens now, and then we can talk about what should happen. So what happens now is that, again, we talk about inefficiencies at the sheriff's office, which result in delays of evictions and not great service of documents to people who are going to be evicted. And so that's problematic. And we need to modernize that process because that will help both tenants and landlords. If you had a modernized, that side of the shop was modernized. It would help with transparency and it would also help with accountability. So for example, like with data reasons, the sheriff's office should be collecting data. So like city council members and legislators know where evictions are occurring. Who's doing evictions. It would be great to overlay an eviction map with a crime map to see if we have some correlations. And that doesn't happen unless you modernize and have some data. So that would be number one. But what happens now is the deputies go out and they serve an eviction. They put the family out. They change the locks or the landlord changes the locks. And then they sign paperwork and they leave. When I talk about humanizing the eviction process, the deputy is there not on the landlord side, not on the tenant side. They're there on everyone's side. They're peace officers, and they're there to serve. And so when we remove a family from a home by court order, because the sheriff's office is ordered to do those things, if the sheriff's deputy was trained and was given proper direction, they would be able to identify that the family they just evicted is now an at-risk family, and they need to connect them in the field with services. And what that means is, they need to like find out where the child is in school and notify the school. It means that they have to ask people, do you have a place to go? And some people will say, I'm going to go to my sister's or my brother's or I have a place to stay. But other people are going to say, I have nowhere to go. right? I have no idea what I'm going to do. And I'm in a hopeless situation right now. And so the deputy sheriff in the field, it's not too much to ask that deputy sheriff to have relationships with, and the sheriff's office needs to make these relationships with homeless services, with Catholic charities, with eviction prevention, and with various other people, legal aid, various other people who provide services to people who have become homeless. And right then and there, after the eviction occurs, you know, provide those services to the individuals. And that is not happening now. And that's such low-hanging fruit to do something like that.
And I don't want to interrupt you on that point, but I mean, I'm probably going to get on a little bit of a soapbox here. So are you telling me that right now, if you had an eviction order and you went to someone's house and the eviction started and was in process, the sheriff's deputies don't have a card or resource to connect that person with another entity, whether it's within government or private, that can help them with next steps?
Yeah, that's correct. Right. In fact, the deputies are what happens is when the initial eviction order is mailed out to the tenant, it has some literature in it that tells them who to call. But in the field, the deputy is instructed to evict the family. Right. And then move on to their next eviction. The service, there's no service providing aspect of it. I'm going so far to say we should probably employ a couple social workers that foster these relationships so that the deputy can connect them by the phone from the field to our social workers back in the office. And so they can find some place for them to go.
How many evictions happen per day? If you could estimate about how many?
Sure. So, before COVID, and we're getting back into before COVID times, there was 300 evictions scheduled a day, and they would do about, right. Now, not all of them would go. Some people would be canceled, but Monday through Friday, they would schedule about 300 evictions a day, and a deputy sheriff would put on their calendar. Remember, there's like 27 deputy sheriffs that are signed, and they would put on their calendar an eviction every 15 minutes, and they would do them in the morning. And their job literally is to go out. They were told their job was to go out and evict the people and then move on to the next eviction. There's no service providing that's happening right now. And when I talk about humanizing the eviction process, we need to understand that the people who are being evicted are our residents. These are people who we should care about. These are people who are in a precarious situation right now. These are children, right, who now have had a traumatic event occur to them. And we need to identify these individuals and treat them like human beings, right? And try to connect them with services. And since the sheriff's office is the one who's executing this order and putting them out, I almost equate it to like you have to use a use of force on somebody. You need to call an ambulance for them afterwards and make sure they get treatment.
Right.
It's a similar kind of paradigm that if we care about our people who live in the city, and I do, that we should try to help them at all times. You know, and even though we're forced by the court order to do the eviction, that doesn't mean that we can't assist them afterwards to try to get them back into housing and to make sure the school's aware that a child has been evicted. So if they act out or have an IEP or something's happening, that, you know, we're taking care of our people. That's what we really need to do. And it's not happening now.
Yeah, it a lot of communication breakdown that could solve a lot of problems, head off a lot of problems before they grow. And, you know, the eviction thing is complicated because I think when people hear the word eviction, they think of the single woman with five kids and their stuff is put out on the side. And yes, that's part of it that happens. However, it can be just, I'm not paying you by, right. I left my place abandoned, or squatters even. Right. And people should check out a Baltimore Sun article from earlier in May that discussed a eviction that took way too long, right, and it resulted in potentially two deaths that occurred in the house via squatters, because the person who purchased the house couldn't enter the residence because squatters were in there and he had to go through the eviction process. But I think that's a worthwhile read in the Baltimore Sun that kind of helps explain a little bit more of this process and the backlog. 300 a day surprised the heck out of me. I never would have guessed that many. That's a different type of crisis. But we could talk longer. Yes. But people should go visit BaltimoreSheriff.com, BaltimoreSheriff.com, to learn more about Sam Cogan, who is running to be the next Baltimore City Sheriff. And again, a lot of people might not understand what that is. So thank you very much for joining me, and good luck to you on the campaign.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate that. And thank you for your listeners. I know it was a lot of information, but, you know, the sheriff's office is very important. This is a very important election if we want to really help the city. And I've been telling people, you know, if you want to do something about crime and you want to do something about housing safety, look at the sheriff's office and look at my platform and do your research. And I think you, you'll come to the conclusion that we need a new sheriff in town.
We need a new sheriff in town. So we'll leave it there. Sam Cogan is on all of the social media platforms. They'll be tagged along with this video and audio. Thank you all for listening to this special episode of To Be More Podcast, another conversation with the candidates. This is the office of the sheriff in Baltimore. We'll see you next time.